Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Independence Day weekend, the second day of July, 2011. This is episode 783. And by the way, for those of you watching video, we now offer the full version of each show, so you get all 4 hours of the Tech Guy, 2 hours at a time. I think that's really good news, and we thank Squarespace, our new sponsor, for making that possible. So enjoy 783 coming at you right now. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your new account for 6 months, go to Squarespace.com. Use the offer code TechGuy7. Well, a very good day to you. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And it's time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, and all that jazz. The stuff that's surrounding us. Look to your left. There's some. Look to your right. There's some. Look down. There's some. 888. I'll give you my phone number if you want to talk about it. 8888 Ask Leo. 888-827-5536. I'm the Dr. Laura for the digital generation. I am my computer's mom. I will help you with this stuff. Where was I the other day? You see it all the time now. I don't have to tell you. Looking at a bus stop or walking by somewhere, and every single person had their nose buried in their phone. Every single person. I mean, it almost is a joke. We're all going, checking in, texting, Twittering, Facebooking. It's the way we socialize nowadays. Even if you're standing next to a human being, your socializing is all happening with somebody on the internet, isn't it? I think that's interesting. I'm not going to judge it. I'm not going to judge it. Mostly because that's exactly what I'm doing too. Google has decided to ride this internet thing, this social internet. So this is an evolutionary step, I think, in the internet. That's really the message of all of this. We are going through a change in how we use computers, and in this case,
what's happening is, let's start at the beginning. So technology, computers particularly, originally they were just big old fancy calculators. I mean, that's really what they were. They were calculators that were faster and more flexible. But if you look at an Apple II running VisiCalc, the first spreadsheet program, it was a glorified calculator. Then comes email, modems, BBSs, pretty early on. And suddenly, well, now there's a little, this is a communications device too, but nothing compared to when you hooked it up to the internet. Now it's a communications device like crazy. A publishing device too. Suddenly people are making music on their computer, publishing it on the internet, selling it, creating a business or writing a blog that turns out to make. Amanda Hocking is a great example. Here's a woman who just a few years ago, she wanted to be a writer. She always, her whole life, she wanted to be a writer. And she was, you know, taking the traditional path. She was writing stuff, submitting it to publishers. There was a great article about her 2 weeks ago in the Sunday Times. Traditional path. And rejection letter after rejection letter. Finally, a couple of things happened. One, her lifelong friend and roommate said, "You're writing other people's stuff. Write what you want and know and love." She said, "Okay." And this was the big thing. "And publish it yourself. Why wait for a publisher nowadays? We're welcome to the modern world. Create ebook editions. Sell them for 99 cents. She did, and sold millions. So many so that finally the real publishers sat up and took notice. And then she did something that I might disagree with. She signed a deal with St. Martin's Press. Now, they're going to give her millions of dollars, so I can't really complain. But this Amanda Hawking is 26 years old, already a best-selling author without a publisher on the internet. And because of her success in a genre that probably publishers kind of mock, the fantasy, you know, vampire, troll. She likes trolls, not troll dolls, trolls. She says trolls are misunderstood, underappreciated. So she writes troll fiction. But found an audience. And then the publisher said, hey, well, we like that. And so now she's doing quite well, thank you. As a published author, or soon to be published author, thank you. It's an amazing story. And it wouldn't have happened without the internet. So suddenly it's gone from a calculator to a communications device to a publishing device. And then, and this is the big shift that happened in probably 2006, when Facebook started opening itself up to the public. Twitter arrives on the scene. And suddenly it's social. Now, as always, there's no sharp cutoff on this stuff because there was social, you know, Orkut. Google invented a social network before Facebook, before Mark Zuckerberg in his dorm room at Harvard even wrote the first line of code for Facebook. Orkut was around, what, in 2004, 2003, something like that. So this is an example of how it sometimes takes a little while before this stuff catches on. But now, with Facebook now, we estimate, get this, has 750 million regular users. Not people signed up who never checked in. People who check in at least once a month. 750 million. How many people are on the internet? That's like half of everybody on the internet has a Facebook page. It's astounding. And what's changed is, for, you know, for Google was dominating the internet because they were the search engine of choice. They still are, I guess. But it turns out that that's not where you spend your time. It's not perhaps going forward the way we want to find stuff. What we really want is we want to do a search, but a search that is somehow molded or changed by who we know and our friends and what they think is important. And this is what Bing is doing with Facebook. They're adding Facebook likes to the Bing search so that you can do a search. But if your friends and Facebook friends particularly like a search result, that will be highlighted. Like, hey, your friend Brad really liked this page. Now, that's probably not meaningful if what you're searching for is athlete's foot. But it might be significant if what you're searching for is a good Italian restaurant tonight. Oh, Brad really likes this one. Or a movie. Or even choosing a hardware store or an airline. Those things, you know, you care about what your friends say. So this is the current gold rush on the internet. I say all that to introduce Google Plus. Now, I know most of you cannot yet, it's closed beta, cannot yet get involved with Google Plus. It is a very interesting, it's not one thing. It's a very interesting handful of things that are aimed at introducing social signals, that's what they call it, into Google, what Google knows, into Google search fundamentally, but into what Google knows. So, you know, some of you are involved probably or using it, but most of you may not even have heard about this yet because it's still a closed beta. That means nobody can get involved unless they, you know, get invited or somehow, you know, you can go to plus, plus.google.com and say, let me in. But apparently they're really not letting a lot of people in. At best guess, at most, there's maybe tens of thousands of people in there. Maybe fewer. It's very small. But for those who are using it, and I've been using it for 3 days now, something like that, significant change in Google. A very powerful introduction, has some things that Facebook is, in fact, doesn't have yet. For instance, there's a thing called the Hangout. You press start a Hangout, and you and up to 9 of your friends can be in a video chat with one another. In real time, it works really well. This is something Facebook doesn't have, although, as soon as Google announced this, Mark Zuckerberg said, the founder of Facebook, yeah, we're going to have a big announcement next week, and I think that it's all agreed that the big announcement will be Skype version of this with Facebook, which shows you, I mean, that's how long has it been since Google did something that everybody else was trying to go, oh, well, we got to do that. They have a thing called Circles that allows you to organize who you follow in such a nice way that you can completely control what kind of information you see. That's a Twitter kind of a thing. They're competing with Twitter and Facebook. But the interesting thing Google says is we're not going after Twitter or Facebook. People don't like Facebook. We are going after a transformation of Google itself. They're betting the company. I'll talk a little more about it later today, but let's go to the phones. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. All right, hey, something new on the Tech Guy Show, and I just want to let everybody up and down the Twit Podcast Network know about this. Now, we do a Twit podcast of the show. In the past, we've never been able to sell advertisements on the Twit podcast because it was owned by Premier Radio Networks. We've made an agreement with Premier Radio Networks that lets us put some of the Twit ads on this. Oh, Dow, I know you say, oh, I don't want ads on my my podcast, but here's the trade-off. There are no ads. We're going to cut all the radio ads out. So what is normally a three-hour radio show will only be 2 hours in audio and video of the podcast. You'll get a discrete video podcast for each day. That's something new that we are going to do instead of the video cutdown you got before. And in return, we'll have one or two ads in the whole show for Twit products. And so I think that's a great return. We've been spending money making these podcasts for 3 years and not been able to monetize them. So I'm actually very excited. I think that's a really good thing. And I'm really excited to be able to say that our very first advertiser is Squarespace.com. And you've heard me talk about Squarespace.com, I'm sure, many times before. It's really great software for hosting and maintaining a website. Notice I don't say blog. I mean, it's a great blog platform, but it can be so much more. And I invite you to go try it. If you're looking to create a new website for yourself, for your business, for your kids, for one-off websites, for special events, a birthday or a wedding, there is no better way to do it than Squarespace. Squarespace, it's the whole kit and caboodle. It's the hosting and the software and the templates, that is everything you need, right? So go to squarespace.com, click this big green try it free button right on the front page there. All you need to provide, you don't need a credit card or anything, all you need to provide is the URL that you want to use, Lisa and Joey's wedding, the password, and an email address. That's so they can send you the password if you forget it, but also so they can let you know when the two-week trial is over. You will get, for 2 weeks, the full access to the full Squarespace suite of tools. So it is hosting. I can't underscore how important that is. You are getting the best-in-class hosting. There is nothing better than Squarespace. Lots of big commercial companies use Squarespace because the bandwidth that they provide is just unbeatable. The support they provide, the reliability that they provide is remarkable. Every Squarespace website uses state-of-the-art hosting. Look at this tweet from Kevin Rose. Wow, 85,000 uniques to my site today from Dig. I know this shouldn't shock me, but it does. Insane. Thanks for visiting. His site stayed up because it's a Squarespace site. So the best-in-class hosting, truthfully, is none better. But then on top of it, the great Squarespace software. There's a couple of reasons why that's good. First of all, it's always up to date. They manage it. They maintain it, so it's always secure. And the software, it's the best there is. Great templates that make sure that your site looks like no other. And is easy to use. You don't need to be a web design professional to get a professionally designed website with Squarespace.com. Incredible stats. SEO, that means that Google and the others will see your site and be able to return it to the searcher so that, you know, you're there. You're on Google automatically here. Mobile versions of your site, that's built in, and you have the great iPhone and iPad apps that make it really easy to post and moderate and even get stats for your site. I just want you to try this. It's so fantastic. Go to squarespace.com, click the try it free button. If it seems to work for you, I got a special deal, a free trial and 10% off your new accounts for 6 months. Please use our offer code for the radio show, TechGuy7, if you do that. That's squarespace.com. Try it out. If you decide to buy, use TechGuy7, the number 7 for the offer code. You'll get 10% off your new account. 10% for 6 months for the first half year. I'm a big fan. I know you will be too. Our Inside Twit blog is on it. Squarespace, the secret behind exceptional websites. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. If you'd like to give me a call, I'd love to hear from you. Who's the first caller, Kyle? Nobody there. Guess they all...
Line one, sorry.
John on line one.
You need to pick it up for me. John on line one, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Good morning, Leo.
Good morning, John.
Hi, it's great to talk to you. I like to listen to you every Saturday and Sunday when I can.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. What can I do for you today?
Well, Leo, I'm not sure if you're aware of it. I'm sure some of your other listeners are, but I guess starting July 7th, Verizon is no longer going to offer their unlimited data plan.
Yes.
They're going to start using a tiered format.
Yes, everybody's going to do this, I'm sure, in time. AT&T started it, and I think all the phone companies were watching carefully and saying, let's see how this, see what happens. And they got away with it, so now, of course, they're all going to do it. Although I don't know what all means anymore now that AT&T bought T-Mobile. Really, you only have three cell phone companies in the U.S., Verizon, AT&T, and Sprint. And I suspect Sprint will be sold soon. So I think we're rapidly getting to the point where it's just going to be a couple of companies. So the fact that Verizon and AT&T, the two biggest companies, are doing this means welcome. No more unlimited data on cell phones.
Exactly. Well, my question is then, I was going to wait until September when I'm due for an upgrade, but they have an early upgrade I can do now, which would allow me to then take advantage of these last days and get in on one of the last of the unlimited data plans.
But, and then you get grandfathered in forever, or until they change their mind.
Yeah, as I thought, I changed the time frame.
Yeah. See, forever in for cell phone companies could be 6 months.
Yeah.
AT&T, there are people grandfathered into AT&T's unlimited plans if they bought an iPhone or an iPad in the dim, dark days before tiering. And so, you know, they have to work very carefully to make sure that they don't in any way invalidate that. And ultimately, you know, we're going to stumble. It's a game of gotcha. And AT&T is going to say, oh, yeah, great. Now you're not unlimited anymore. So I think the same thing will happen with Verizon. They'll offer grandfathered plans until you make a mistake and accidentally. And then say, well, no, you checked that box right there. That means that you're tiered now. You'll have to spend so much energy paying attention to this, might not even be worth it. I don't really, to be honest, I don't think it's a huge problem. I think you figure out how much data you use and you buy that tier. It never really was unlimited, you know. It was limited unlimited. It was 5 gigabytes unlimited. I don't know why they say unlimited.
Ah, I did not know that.
Well, I mean, there's some debate over that. You could exceed the 5 gigabytes, and sometimes they wouldn't ding you, but they had the right to charge you a lot once you went past 5 gigabytes. I don't think unlimited ever really was truly unlimited. Well, maybe there have been a few. T-Mobile, when they were the also-rans, had a real unlimited plan. Sprint had a real unlimited plan. But I think both AT&T and Verizon have been 5 gigabytes unlimited for a long time. So the truth is the tiering, I think it's a tempest in a teapot. I wouldn't worry about it. I think you buy the amount that you're going to use. Try to stick to that. That's the only real risk.
You know, well, that's no... I guess my real question, though, is I want to get one of their 4G phones, but I'm having trouble trying to decide which one would probably be the better one to get. Different reviews vary widely. I'm kind of leaning toward the Samsung Droid Charge because it's got that great AMOLED screen on it.
Well, if you're going 4G, of course you're going Android.
There's
no 4G iPhone as yet. In fact, there's some debate about whether the next iPhone will be 4G at all. Some people think no. So you're going Android. The nice thing about Android is the same as the bad thing about Android. There's a lot of choice, which means, you know, you're faced with which phone do I buy. One thing I would absolutely consider in this is which version of the operating system the phone comes with, because one of the things we're finding out is that these phone companies are extraordinarily slow to upgrade. I think you've got to make sure you want to look for a phone that comes with 2.3.3 or 2.3.4. That's called Gingerbread, not Froyo 2.2.2. And so that's the first thing to look for. You'll see what version of Android it comes with. You want Gingerbread.
And then I think you want to, you know, decide about battery life, how important that is to you, because big screens tend to eat a lot of battery. Super AMOLED screens tend to eat a lot of battery. So these are all things that you might want to consider. Are you going to be here's how you think about this. Are you going to be more than 8 hours away from a charger every day?
Probably not. Okay. No.
Yeah, because most people aren't. First thing I do, I get into the office, plug in the phone. Get in the car, plug in the phone. Because these phones don't go all day. You got to charge them. I even bought a second battery. I'm using on T-Mobile the G2X. This is the other thing. So battery life, consider that. All of the Android phones have relatively poor battery life. Some have unusably poor battery life. So, you know, if you can live with 4 hours because you're never away from your charger for 4 hours, that's fine. I bought a second battery for this phone because mostly I am by a charger, but there are times I'm at a conference or traveling that I want to go 12 hours. Solution, second battery. You also might want to consider the processor. The newer phones have dual-core processors.
Verizon's phones don't have it yet.
Right. Now, is that important to you? That really, that's another one where you think about your use case, because everybody's different. Dual processor tends not to make a big difference in some of the things. Like, I noticed, for instance, on this G2X, which is dual processor, that it's still pitifully slow when I have to download or load something. When something's downloading in the background, the phone is still unusable. Where I see the difference in dual core is some of the gaming, because it uses the dual core phones also tend to have better graphics chips. So gaming is much, much better looking. I do notice that when I'm in an application, it seems snappier. Playing back Flash actually works on a dual core Android phone, whereas it's really unusably slow on a single core. So there's some of the things to consider. So what are the choices on Verizon? Is the Thunderbolt, which I like a lot. The Bionic has been delayed.
Yes, it has. That would be the first dual core.
And that's the one I would really like to see. But again, you're going to want to check battery life before you plunk down your hard-earned money on that.
Right.
I think the Thunderbolt's nice. What is the other one you're considering?
There's the Samsung Droid Charge and the LG Revolution, and I was kind of leaning toward the Droid Charge.
Okay, one more thing to consider with Android that you don't have to think about with many other phones. They're all running the same operating system, Android, but each manufacturer lays junk on top of it, and each carrier lays additional junk on top of it. You're given that you're going to have the Verizon junk because you've decided Verizon, but now you have to decide, do I like the junk that Samsung puts on top of it, or the TouchWiz, or do I like the HTC junk? I'm an HTC junk fan. I think that they do the best skin on top of it. The LG Revolution, very nice. There's a lot of choices. Let's talk more in a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
You know, it's great. We're just spending the first half hour of the show talking about what cell phone to choose, because frankly, that's the conversation these days. It's not Mac or PC, you know, Windows or OS X. It's not Dell or HP anymore. It's Verizon or T-Mobile or AT&T. Is it iPhone or Android? That's really where computing has gone. That's where all the innovation is. That and the internet. So I don't think there's anything wrong with talking about cell phones obsessively. It reminds me very much of that kind of indecision that you had to face when you were out buying your first computer. I don't know what to get. And it's the same thing that happened when you were buying your first stereo when you were in college, and you were buying your first refrigerator. And it's just, there's too many choices. I'm a big fan of Android. Now, by the way, interesting, because Google, which as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, has this new Google Plus thing. By doing Google Plus and making an Android app for it only, has for the very first time got iPhone users just a little bit jealous. Android has the advantage here. Now, Google has said, "Oh no, we're going to do an iPhone version." There is a kind of a mobile web version for the iPhone. You can go to plus.google.com on your iPhone and get some of the Google Plus features. But really, it's not as good as the Google Plus application, which is only available on, what a surprise, Android. Isn't that interesting? I bet you there are people in Google, and this is kind of a typical battle within companies. There are people within Google who said, you know, the Android team primarily, who says, oh, whatever you do, don't make this for iOS. We want to sell some more Android phones. I don't think they need to sell more Android phones. This week, Andy Rubin, who is on the Android team, announced that Google is now activating 500,000 Android phones a day. 500,000 Android phones a day. Is that not stunning? What is that, 15 million new Android phones a month? That is dominance, total dominance of the smartphone space, at least in the U.S. So much so, what was I watching? A TV show the other day. Was it True Blood? It was some hip-hopping, happening TV show. And very clearly, instead of an iPhone, they were using an Android phone. You saw the Android swipe right at the beginning, you know, in full screen. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. I don't know if Google paid for that, Motorola or HTC. I think it was HTC phone. I don't know if they paid for it or Verizon paid for it. Or maybe it's just that show's way of saying, we're with it, we're hip, we're happening. For a long time, you'd see iPhones on TV and stuff. Although it's, in my opinion, a big mistake to show any technology on a TV show or a movie. Nothing dates your film more. I was watching Wall Street the other day? Michael Douglas, the original Wall Street. And the show, movie doesn't look dated. In fact, nowadays it looks really pretty accurate. Doesn't look dated at all until he whips out his ginormous cell phone. It's huge. Now, I'm sure the producer and director and screenwriter at the time thought this will show that Michael Douglas is a power broker because he's got one of these rare birds, this cell phone. That just shows how powerful he is. But now it just makes him look pathetic. It's completely the wrong message. It's fun. It's really funny to see these old movies, and when they pull out a big old phone, it just, you know. So I think, though, most movies nowadays, if you look, when they do, they use a cell phone, but they really kind of hide it. They put it behind their hand. They don't show it off, unless, of course, they're getting paid to show it off. It's the last thing you want to do, show a cell phone, show technology of any kind, because it immediately dates you. It's like hairstyles and tie widths, only worse. So which Verizon phone should you get? It's a difficult decision because there's so many choices. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's a good thing. I think it's challenging. But I like it that there's so many choices. I think that's what we want. But that's Apple's pitch, by the way. And one of the reasons Apple succeeds is because it's easy. You just buy an iPhone and that's it. There's one. You choose your carrier and you buy an iPhone. But then you go to Verizon. And there's the Droid Incredible, the Samsung Fascinate, the Samsung Continuum, the Motorola Citrus. There's a, you know, and those are the ones on sale. And, you know, a ton of other smartphones. They are just the Thunderbolt, and the names don't help much, do they? They don't really tell you much. Yeah, sure, you could buy the iPhone, the one and only iPhone. I guess they still sell an Apple 3GS. So you could buy the iPhone 3GS or the 4, or you could buy a Revolution, a Trophy, an Xperia Play, a Droid X2, a Droid Charge, a Droid Incredible, a Thunderbolt, a Droid Pro, a Droid X, a Samsung Fascinate, an LG Vortex, a Motorola Citrus, a Samsung Continuum, a Droid 2. And they're all running Android, but they're all different. I think the best way is just to play with it. I like the idea of a dual processor. It just means you're getting the most modern phone. Remember, you're going to be stuck with this for 2 years. So you want to get the most modern phone. Another choice is, do you like a giant screen? You have choices now of screen sizes from 4.3, 4, 3.5 inches. Bigger screen is nice for some people, but some people don't want a phone that's that big. And, of course, big screen means big phone. I think the Samsung Super AMOLED screens are beautiful, but in fact, I was kind of happy when I moved from a Samsung Nexus S, this is on T-Mobile, to the Galaxy, I'm sorry, the G2X, the LG. It uses a more traditional IPS LCD screen. And I think, frankly, it's better looking than the... I used to be a Super AMOLED fanboy, but now I look at it and I'm like, you know what? I think this IPT screen's better. And if I look at battery use, it's much better than the Super AMOLEDs. So I know I'm not cutting the Gordian knot here. It's gotten more complicated, not less. It's a difficult choice, but I like it that you have a choice. That's, I guess, my point. Luke is in Texas. He's got a question for the tech guy, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Luke.
Hey, Leo. Happy Independence Day weekend to you.
Oh, I forgot to say. Yes, happy Independence Day. Thank you.
Thank you. I have an interesting problem. At least I think it's an interesting problem. I hope it's an interesting problem.
I'm interested already.
I'm a college student and a photographer. And I'm trying... I had a HP TouchSmart TX2 tablet PC that kind of just died, basically. So the entire Windows part of it died. It's a great...
Do you like tablets?
I liked it a lot for taking notes in class.
So you want to stick with the tablet?
No, it's not bad. I have a new PC already.
Oh, okay. Hold on. Let's talk some more. I got to take a break. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. All right, I give up. What's the story? What is this music?
It's just the soundtrack from Wall Street.
The soundtrack from Wall Street. You see, you get this guy, you can't pull one over on him. Kyle Benham, who runs our board and picks the strangest songs. Do you, Kyle, what do you do? Do you just download this stuff from YouTube? You just find it somewhere on the internet, huh?
It's a secret.
It's a secret. He won't tell me. He's just looking at me funny. 888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. 888-827-5536, toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. You know, you don't have to listen, you don't have to remember the number. You do have to listen, I'm sorry. Not allowed. You cannot not listen to the show. But you don't have to memorize the phone number. You just go to the website. That's all you have to memorize is techguylabs.com. If you memorize techguylabs.com, that's the website that has the show notes. Every show for the last 700 and what is this? This is episode 783. So the last 782 shows. Audio as well as show notes. And then you'll also see the phone number there. You'll see just a ton of stuff. It's a good resource. And I'd just like you to know where that is. Tech Guy Labs. .com 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. But again, you'll find it all. Everything you need at techguylabs.com. We were talking to Luke in Texas. And Luke is trying to figure out. I'm not sure what he's trying to figure out. He's got a computer. He wants to, I guess, turn it into a tablet. Is that what you're up to, Luke?
Yes, that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to take a tablet PC and turn it into an external tablet for my new laptop.
All right. So you need a touch screen device of some kind.
Well, I have the HP TouchSmart TX2.
I see. You're going to keep what you got.
Right. And then if there's any way to turn that, I have a great touch screen and a great hardware there. And I want to see if I can turn that into an external tablet for my new laptop.
I'm glad you're a college kid, Luke, because this is a great project for somebody who has a lot of time. there's a company called Wacom, WACOM, who sells a monitor, a touchscreen monitor that you can attach to any computer. It's called the Cintiq. And what is a touchscreen? It is a standard screen with some hardware attached or some overlay on it that will allow you to touch it. And then the touch is converted into coordinates and, you know, all, basically, it interprets it as a mouse. A mouse that has kind of, how can I describe this? XY positioning. So you just touch something and the mouse pointer just jumps there. It also has to have some way of clicking, which whether it's tapping or double touching or whatever. The HP Touch Smart screen, it certainly is a screen with some technology overlaid. Sometimes it's a capacitive layer on top of it that can sense the electronic, conductivity of your fingertips. Some older screens, I'm not sure how the Cintiq works, but some older screens have sensors in the bezel that sense anything that breaks the plane and where it is. There's all sorts of different ways to do that. The problem is I don't know how the Touch Smart screen signals the operating system that this is where your finger has landed. Almost certainly there's a custom driver for it.
Right.
So
that was my concern. And I considered something like a go to my PC style thing, but the frame rate.
No, you don't want to do that. It'll be too slow. It'll be sluggish. One of the things, and you'll notice this immediately with some off-brand tablets, one of the things Apple was very careful about with the iPad 2 is that it's very responsive. So when you touch the screen, it's there. There's no lag between you. And if you do anything like a remote access or a client-server setup, you're going to feel some lag as the software says, okay, he's touched the screen here, position the pointer there, and, you know, by that time you go, I'm bored with this. So I suspect that the question is that HP will have solved that, right? And it's a Windows driver. So
Yes. What
you got to figure out, and I bet you if you look online, I don't know. I should say I have no idea. But I understand what you would need to do, which is you need to get that. Is the screen separate from the Touch Smart, or is it a built-in, isn't it?
No, it's built-in.
Yeah, so that's another problem, isn't it? You're going to have to, you know, somehow pry the screen off the computer.
Right, or hook the computers together, or I wasn't really sure exactly how it could possibly work.
Well, it can. You know, I mean, the truth is the screen is separate from the computer in the sense that it's not, you know, it's attached to the motherboard via a ribbon cable.
Right.
You'd need to make the same attachment via probably, is your new computer a desktop or a laptop?
It's a laptop.
Okay. Well, let's make it even more complicated. So the laptop will have a DVI port out. You'll have to figure out how to get the hardware, the DVI connector, to go to whatever that screen. It's probably electrically DVI. You'll just need to make an adapter that will go into that screen's ribbon cable that will make the DVI work with it. Then you'll have to find a. This is all completely doable. This is the kind of thing hackers do these days. And I say hacker in the kindest, nicest way. This is the kind of thing people who like to hack hardware do. You know, it's fun. You'll have a blast. But it's a challenge. So what you're gonna have to do is figure out how to make the electrical connection between the HP monitor and your DVI output from your laptop. You'll need to make a case for it because you don't want to have the back of the monitor kind of hanging out there.
Right.
So you'll need to make a little case for it. A lot of people who hack hardware do machining on their own or do some sort of fabrication because that's often what's needed. And then you'll need the driver. Now, I suspect the driver is probably easy to find. It's probably on that laptop, the Touch Smart. And HP even may offer a download. So I don't think the driver is so difficult unless HP's put some proprietary hooks in it to keep you from doing exactly this. But I don't know why they would bother. So probably it's just a question of getting the driver for that laptop. Putting it on that laptop. It's probably a Windows 7 driver. And you'd be set. My chat room is very smart at this kind of thing, and Caffeine Free Dave says the place to go is element14.com, element14.com, because they do open source hardware hacking. And this is the kind of, they do Arduino and stuff. This is very hot right now. Some people call it the maker movement from Make Magazine. People who like to take stuff and make it do other stuff. And that's, again, that's a hacker in the best sense of the word. So I think it's a great project. You're not going back to school till September, right, Luke?
Well, actually, I'm taking a crash course in chemistry this summer.
You got plenty of time.
but I can find a way to squeeze it in.
I think it's a great project. I don't, but I'll let me say this also. I don't know if it's doable. But I think it would. Well, my best guess is it is.
It's almost worthless to me at this point anyway, because I don't need the laptop. I could put Ubuntu on it and use it, but I don't need it for any purpose. So I may as well try to utilize it as best as I can.
Hack the heck out of it. That sounds like fun. All right. Good luck. And if anybody knows anything, you give me a ring at 8888-ASK-LEO, or you go in our chat room at irc.twit.tv, or you just give me an answer. You can email me, whatever, and we'll get it on the air if we have somebody who says, oh, yeah, I did that. That's what you want. And that's what you're going to Google for, Luke, is, oh, yeah, I did that. Here's what you do. There's hardly anything these days that you can come up with that somebody hasn't already done and documented with pictures and step-by-step instructions on the internet. My favorite project from Geek Dad, the Wired magazine column, is building a dinosaur out of chicken bones. I'm not going to go any farther. You read that. Now, well, a good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. It's time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater. Yeah, you know, it's easy to remember. I don't have to give you a list. Everything with a chip in it. My phone number, 8888-ASK-LEO. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, I'd love to hear from you. 888-827-5536. Toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. Outside the U.S., Skype out. And the website is techguylabs.com. I don't say that enough because everything you need to know is there. The link to the chat room, the live video, the downloads of the audio, the show notes, all that stuff. TechGuyLabs.com. We were talking about touchscreens, and I should mention the HP touchpad came out this week. Now, I thought I would be running out and getting one. Then I started to see the early reviews, and I said, maybe not. HP, as you may remember, bought a little company called Palm. And their operating system called Palm OS. You remember, or Web OS. You remember that? Remember the Palm Pre? Cute little phone. Adorable little phone. And the Palm Pre was, you know, I liked it, but the hardware was too slow and didn't really, it just didn't do didn't do well. Disappeared, pretty much. HP bought the assets of Palm, and they got WebOS, and now this is their touchpad, their tablet, their iPad competitor based on WebOS. And I thought, well, that's great, because I really liked WebOS. I liked how it multitasked. I thought it was very innovative. Unfortunately, the early reviews are not so great. It's exactly the same price as an iPad, 16 or 32 gigabytes of storage, dual core processors like the iPad 2, but running WebOS instead of the iPad's iOS. And of course, the big thing that's missing is the hundreds of thousands of apps that Apple has available on its iPad store. I think the number of iPad specific apps just crossed 25,000. That's probably what we should use as our benchmark. Not the hundreds of thousands that work on the iPhone, but the 25,000 that are specifically taking advantage of the full iPad screen. So that's the benchmark, 25,000 apps. Unfortunately, for the new HP touchpad, there are merely 300 of them. There are 8,000 WebOS apps, but HP says about 700 of those won't work. Angry Birds, yes. Facebook, yes, it's interesting. HP actually designed a custom Facebook app. That's something they have that iPad doesn't have, a custom Facebook app. But I'm hearing reports that it's kind of slow and laggy. I haven't reviewed it. I was going to buy it, and I decided to save $500. Well, because I bought BlackBerry's Playbook, I was excited about that, and it's just sitting in its box upstairs. I bought a bunch of Android tablets. Nice. They're just sitting on the coffee table unused. The truth is, the question that you have to ask yourself is, why shouldn't I buy an iPad 2? If you're going to get an iPad or a pad or a tablet, I don't know, what is this category called? Tablets? If you're going to get a tablet, see, I don't like the word tablet because that reminds me of the original tablets that Microsoft pushed over the last decade that were so horrible. I guess that's the word we have. If you're going to get a tablet, the question you need to ask yourself is, why shouldn't I get an iPad? Because that's got everything. That's the one. Is there a compelling reason to get something else? For some, it will be, yeah, I hate Apple. Okay. But for those of you who don't have that reaction, I don't think there's any reason to get anything else. Maybe for political reasons, you say, no, I don't want to support. I want to support the other companies. I want to support Google and Android because I believe that they are somehow politically, they're open and somehow politically better than Apple. Okay. Just understand, you're not making the choice for technical reasons. You're because it's a better tablet. You're choosing your tablet because for political reasons. Admittedly, they're not so much worse that you're taking a big hit. But look, for a normal person out to buy an iPad or an iPad-like device, it's hard to think of a single reason why you shouldn't just buy the iPad. It's not like these other tablets are less. It's not like they're thinner or lighter, faster. It's not like they have more applications or better applications. It's not like they have better screens. It's hard to come up with a reason why you just shouldn't just buy the one that everybody else is buying. Somebody said, and I think this is true, you don't talk about MP3 players anymore. If you're going to buy a music player, you buy an iPod. And the category, there is a category, MP3 players, but there's really... It's the iPod and a few also-rans. If you're going to buy a tablet, you buy an iPad. You may not like Apple's dominance. I know there are people who don't, but it's just a fact right now. 8888 Ask Leo. So I know there's a lot of interest, absolutely a lot of interest in, the HP touchpad and others. And from a purely technical point of view, I think it is interesting, and I encourage them. I want to see competition. That's great. But I don't think we're going to see anything, probably not even this year. I don't think we're going to see anything that makes you say, gee, I'd rather have that. That's what I want. That's so much better, or even that's a little bit better. In no case are they better, as far as I can tell. 8888 Ask Leo. Michelle is in Orange County, our next caller. Hi, Michelle. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I am so excited to talk to you. I can't tell you. You are not only brilliant, but you're just such a good and kind human being. Thank you so much.
And right now I'm bright red, Michelle. Thank you.
And your family is so lucky. And I can go on and on. And I am the biggest non-techie person out there. But I love listening to you. You've got the most gentle voice.
Oh, you're so... I do... Most of the stuff I do during the week is really geeky. It's for the ultra nerd. And this is the only thing I do every week is this radio show that I try to talk to real people. So I'm really thrilled to hear you say that, Michelle, because I think it's so important that we break this barrier between the nerd and the normal person.
Well, I don't know that I'm normal because I was just that... I don't have a smartphone. I have a dumb phone. And I, for a little bit less than a week, I was not online and did very little with my phone, as a matter of fact. And I was really happy with it.
Oh, yeah, you're definitely not one of us then, Michelle.
I know, I'm not. But, when you walk down major streets in major cities of this country, usually you have eye contact with people, and now everybody is just glued to their technology.
True? I noticed that myself the other day. I was mentioning this at the beginning of the show. I can't remember where I was, a bus stop or an elevator, but everybody was staring into this little device.
So do you think that's good socially for people?
Well, okay. You've really opened a can of worms here, Michelle. It's a great question. I think it doesn't matter whether it's good or not because it's what is. So I think that it's going to happen. Let's say, and I think we could agree, it's bad. It would be better if people made eye contact and spoke to one another. So I think that's probably the case. Is there anything we can do about this? Are you going to ban cell phones?
No.
Are you going to go around a bus stop slapping people and saying, look at me?
No, I'm not.
I agree with you. I mean, I think it probably is bad in some ways. Now, I could also make you the argument that it may be possible that this is the new way we are social. Because, yes, it's true, we're not social to the person standing next to us, but maybe in some ways we're learning more about people around the world and a broader variety of people. I don't know. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 19 minutes after the hour, we are talking, actually 20 after the hour, we're talking tech with all of you at 8888 Ask Leo. We're talking about Google Circles. You know, it's funny, I have a debate with myself about whether to talk too much about Google Circles because I don't like to talk about technology you can't buy. We were talking to Michelle a minute ago. I just loved that call. She raised such an interest. In fact, are you still there, Michelle? I didn't mean to kind of, we ran out of time. You still there? Oh, I didn't hang up on you. I had to put you on hold because commercials, you know, are very important. Somebody has to pay for all the electricity I'm using.
I know. Thank you so much.
But you raised such a good point. But I hear people bemoan the state of affairs these days. But what are you supposed to do?
I know nothing, and it's okay. It's okay. It's just I'm unusual, and I still appreciate kind of the old-fashioned social interaction. So
the other thing I should point out is that while geeks and nerds are getting a lot of attention these days, and you know, there's all this innovation and invention, and it's really exciting. The vast majority, far more than half, probably 80 or 90% of normal humans are not, doing all this, just me and my ilk. You know, most people are talking to each other at a bus stop, aren't they, I hope?
No, I don't think they are. I was talking to my kids. I said, you know, it used to be in the old days when people went to dine alone, they came with a book. Now everybody who's alone is having a relationship with their technology.
But I kind of like that. Isn't that better than dining alone?
No, I think it's better to read a book.
You know, it's terrible. And my wife hates this. My kids hate this. See, it's interesting because in my family, I'm an outlier. My kids and my wife look at me like, what is wrong with you? When we go to a restaurant or go anywhere, first thing I do is pull out my smartphone and check in on Foursquare. And it takes, you know, a minute or two of me not paying any attention. I'll walk into a wall and they think I'm insane. They say, put it away. What are you doing? And I know I'm not alone.
Anyway, the reason I called was because it's another kind of, I hope I'm not boring your audience. I have 30 plus VHS tapes, which I want to convert to DVD. And I'd like to know, I don't want to do any editing. I just want to switch them over. And I started thinking about this a couple of years ago and didn't do it. And now I feel like, well, I should wait till Blu-ray discs are out and there's a way to put them on that because
No, don't worry about that. First of all, the quality of the VHS is so crappy that there's no reason to put them on a Blu-ray disc.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you could store maybe some more video, but there's no reason to. And the good news is that all Blu-ray players will play DVDs for as long as Blu-ray's around. So you don't need to go to Blu-ray. It's expensive. It's more difficult to do Blu-ray. What I would suggest, the most important step is VHS to DVD. That's the analog to digital step. Once it's digital, once it's on a disc, if, you know, you know 10 years from now, you're listening to the tech guy and I'm saying, well, Blu-ray and DVD is dying and we're all using cubic nanometer technology. That's when you say, oh, good. Well, thank goodness I heard Leo say that. And you take your DVDs. They're already bits. So this is a much easier process. And you convert them to cubic nanometer or whatever it is. So, but the big step, the hard step and the time consuming step is getting it from analog, from tape to bits. In this case, from VHS to DVD. Good news. Easy to do. There are less than $100. You can go to the big box stores. You can get it online. There are a number of companies, Magnavox, Toshiba, Panasonic, Samsung, that make DVD-VCR combos.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you should do this soon because I don't know how much longer this is going to be around. But
I know. We started taping the kids when they were born, and so my oldest is just going off to college now.
Me too. We're in the same boat, and I have all these tapes. So what you do is you buy these boxes and you put the VHS tape. This is perfect for what you just said, which is I don't want to edit it. You just want to copy it. You put a the DVD in the burner. You put the VHS. It's all one box. It's just like a VCR. You put the or DVD player. In fact, you can use it after the fact. You can use it as a DVD player. You put your VHS on the other side. You press go. And it takes an hour for an hour. I mean, you have to watch. You don't have to watch it, but the VHS is going to play. And the DVD burner is going to burn. And at the end of that time, you will have a DVD with everything that was on the tape.
Is it better to get a software program?
No.
No. Okay.
Well, if you already have a computer, let's see, it's complicated. If you have a VHS player, a VCR already, VCR, I haven't said that word in a while. If you have a VCR, and then you'll have to buy a little box that hooks up to the VCR and then goes into the computer that takes the bits, the analog video and turns it into bits. And then you have software and you'll record it onto your hard drive. And then that software where you'll put a DVD in and it'll burn it. It's a lot more steps, a lot more trouble. Just get this. It's $70.
Okay.
And every morning you put another tape in and you go to work. And then at the end of 30 days, you'll have 30 DVDs. At the end of a year, you'll have 300 DVDs. In other words, don't be in a hurry. Just every day you do another one.
Okay. And if I want to get two DVDs out of each tape, then I go ahead and I burn it on the computer once I have it in.
Yeah, now you have a stack of DVDs, one DVD for each VHS tape. Actually, you know, if you don't fill the DVD, you can put in another tape and another tape and another tape. What the main thing that you're doing, Michelle, that the critical thing you're doing is you're turning it into bits on that disc. Now you can take the disc and rip it onto your computer and edit it and do whatever you want with it.
Okay.
So you can you can then, after the fact, you say, oh, you know, DVD 1, 8, and 15 have a great series of pictures of a video of my kid growing up. I'm going to take those bits, edit them together, and make one beautiful tape of my son going from being born to college. But you do that later when you're in the mood.
Okay, can you recommend what DVD to get? And I think most of the VHS tapes are 2-hour tapes.
Right,
I'm pretty sure. Can you tell me exactly what the DVD should say?
Should say?
I mean,
like the brand of the player, of the recorder, or the brand of the medium?
No, the medium.
It doesn't matter. It'll when you get the recorder, it'll come with a couple of discs. You want DVD-R. What you don't want is some of these, and you look at the box before you buy it, but some of these record to DVD-RAM, which is a rewritable format that is not widely used anymore. What you really want is DVD-RW or DVD-RW.
Okay.
And that way, that disc is going to play in other DVD players, so you could bring it over to grandma's and say, look, I found the VHS of the time we went to the cabin, and you just put in her DVD player and you can watch it, just like it was a VHS.
Okay.
Yeah, and you can also rip it. That's the technical term for taking what's on that disc and putting it on the hard drive so you can edit it. By the way, not RW. I said the wrong thing. You're right. Thank you. Thank you to David Bix in the chat room and Bong in the chat room. It's DVD-R or DVD-R. That's either one will be fine.
Thank you very much.
Michelle, thank you so much. That's a good question, actually. Everybody wants to know that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I am responsible for potato salad and fireworks at our block party on Monday. But I also signed up to do the music, and this is exactly what I was doing, Kyle, which is I've been going onto Amazon and downloading all the songs. This is one of them that mention America, the USA, 4th of July, and there's a lot of them. I've got 2 or 3 hours worth. Everything from God Bless America, the Ballad of the Green Berets, to R-O-C-K and the USA. It's fun. It's fun. So I hope you're having a good Independence Day weekend. I hope you'll be at a fun party on Monday. I mentioned fireworks because I live in one of the few small towns in the whole U.S. of A. And it's very controversial, that still allow fireworks sales in town. They're safe and sane. I mean, they're kind of compared to the fireworks of my youth. They're not particularly powerful, but they, you know, you could still buy them. And you, it's, you can't use them outside the city. You can only use them within the small confines of Petaluma. This is good because a lot of nonprofits have these firework booths. They've all gone up. The July 1st, they go up all around town. And you can go out and you can buy these fireworks and, you know, poke your eye out if you want. 8888, ask Leo. It feels like, to me, that feels like 4th of July. Nick is in Pittsburgh, PA or California, Nick?
Hi, Leo.
Pittsburgh, PA?
Yes.
Yes. Welcome to the show. What can I do for you?
I had a question for you today about web hosting. What I'm doing is building a Drupal website for our church and trying to find a good host to put it on.
Mm.
When you're looking around online at hosts, everybody says that every host is the worst one you could possibly go with.
You know, this is an important lesson. That's an important lesson. You know, everything now has online reviews. I think that's great. I go to Amazon before I buy anything. I read the reviews. If I go to a restaurant, I look at Yelp before I buy the review, before I go to the restaurant. If I'm hiring a contractor, I go to Angie's List before I hire the That's good. But it is very important to keep in mind that there is that nothing is perfect, and everything will have at least one or two like horrible reviews. And nothing that is nowhere more true than internet service, whether it's hosting, ISPs. For some reason, it may be because it's such a hard thing to do well, there's always somebody who says, oh my gosh, whatever you do, don't use these people. They're horrible. So what I usually do is I kind of discount, unless there's a lot of them, I discount, you know, if there's two or three negative reviews, I just slot, you know, you take off the high and the low. You just chop those off. You got to read, if you don't have maybe more than 10 reviews for something, I don't think you can get a good feel for it. But if in 10 reviews, two are negative, two are super positive, the middle, read the middle six. Those are the ones that are going to, and you want the ones that have the most detail. So if it's negative, tell me why. Say, well, here's the problem. It was down 3 days out of seven. Or they didn't answer the phone when I called. I want to hear what it is that you didn't like about it. So I always discount a review that says, these guys are awful. Partly because that could be a competitor. Remember, on most systems, there are a few that don't, but most systems, they don't really vet these reviews. So some of these reviews could be by the company. Some of these reviews could be by somebody paid for the company. This is a particular problem in web hosting. And finally, some of the reviews could be by somebody who is competing with the company. So you have to keep that in mind as well. You can kind of tell. The real problem with hosting is if you do a Google search for web hosting reviews, almost every one of those sites are set up to get money from the companies they're reviewing. They're not legitimate reviews. They're asking for money, and you'll see featured or the number one is usually a paid hosting company. So it's very hard to judge by reviews, Nick. I would go to a place like broadbandreports.com. This one is in, you know, that's real. Those are not paid reviews. Places like that, they're much more valuable. Now, you said Drupal, and the Drupal's a great, I use Drupal. It's a content management system. We're using it for the Twit site, our big podcast site. We will probably use it for the new Tech Guy site as well. It's a really powerful content management system. Of course, it requires a learning curve. We pay people a lot of money to do our Drupal sites because you have to kind of know Drupal. But I'm crazy about it. The good news is Drupal runs on the kind of traditional, what we call a LAMP stack, which is a terrible phrase. It doesn't sound anything like what it is. It merely means that the software, the server software to support Drupal is very traditional. It's the Apache web server. It's Linux operating system, it's MySQL database, it's PHP. Those are the things Drupal runs on. That means almost all web hosting companies support it. The ones that run Windows hosting don't, but any Unix-based hosting company, Drupal will work fine on. So you don't have to worry about that.
Well, what I was finding was with the database, on some of the shared hosts, they'll have the database server separate from the file server.
That's a good thing.
And long query times on the database, and it was really making the site slow.
Oh, well, that's not a good thing. The reason you do want to separate them, and we do, by the way, is for security. So if there's a MySQL hack, they can't get to the main site. It also usually means that you're more reliable and you can handle more traffic. So I do that with my servers. Of course, if the company is not doing the proper load balancing, you don't want it to slow things down. So that may be that. Here's the other problem, Nick. That may be your fault. It may be a configuration issue on your side. It may be that you haven't tuned the database properly. There's lots of reasons that can happen.
Okay.
Very difficult to handle that. As far as hosting, I would look at broadband reports. You take with a grain of salt any reviews that you read. Certainly do not trust review sites on hosting. I'll tell you what company we use, but it's not a cheap company. It's expensive, and it's for dedicated hosting as opposed to shared hosting, which most people would be. Shared hosting is all you need. That means many servers, many sites are running on a single computer. In our case, we have 6 or 8 dedicated servers. Nobody else is using them. We use a site that I love and I would recommend called SoftLayer, SoftLayer.com. I think they're pretty good. And our chat room is saying, both Mac Wright and Ingjald in the chat room say webhostingtalk.com is a reliable source of reviews. Web hosting, it's a forum, so that would make sense. But again, you'd have to, even whenever you see a forum, you've got to take everything with a grain of salt because, you know, as I mentioned, there's no guarantee that these reviewers are independent. Okay, Nick, good luck.
All right, thanks.
Thanks for the call. Yeah, for a church, most of the time, unless it's a mega church, you don't need a dedicated hosting server. That's a few $100 a month. For $5 or $6 a month, you can get shared hosting. Now, a few $100 a month for a business, or even for a church, if it's a decent-sized church, is not a lot of money for hosting. But when you do that, you're guaranteed getting the best quality. You're buying your own server, in effect. So there's a couple of sources that you can trust. I'm not familiar with Web Hosting Talk. That's new to me, but it looks good. Webhostingtalk.com. I do know broadbandreports.com. They're excellent. Either one would be safe. 8888 ask Leo. Jake in Kentucky, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jake.
Hi there.
Welcome to the show.
How are you?
I'm fantastic. I love, this is my favorite time of summer. I love Independence Day weekend.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Just unfortunately, I'm in a business where I have to work all weekend.
Oh, yeah. Thank goodness I don't work on the weekend. Never mind. Oh, hang on. We're going to take a break. I'll tell you what. I'll get you first when we come back. How about that? Thanks for calling. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. More calls to come. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 888-827-5536. That's the phone number, 8888-ASK-LEO. You can find that on our website, techguylabs.com, if you forget about it. Jake is in Kentucky. He's on the line, and he's got a question. Hi, Jake. Thanks for hanging on.
Not a problem, Leo. Well, my question is this. It's kind of a question, and hopefully that you can enlighten me a little bit. I work for a very large company that has several locations all over the U.S. and across the world. And like a lot of large companies, we have a corporate email client and with calendar and all that. Well, basically, I was wanting to know exactly how to get that to work on smartphones because, for instance, like my phone, I have an iPhone, and I set mine up probably a year or so ago, and it works perfectly. I set it up as an Exchange account.
So there's three kinds of email that most phones can handle. If it's a BlackBerry, there's 4 kinds. There's POP. These are the servers that are pushing the mail out to the phone, or that the phone could get to fetch the mail from. There's POP. You know this. I know. I'm just gonna explain it. POP. IMAP, Exchange, which is a Microsoft server technology, and then BlackBerry Enterprise Server if you're a BlackBerry user, BES. So those are the kind of the 4 different kinds of servers. Is your company running an Exchange server?
Well, here's the thing. I'm not 100% sure. What it is like we have access, like if I'm at home or if I'm on any type of PC, we have Outlook web access, like a lot of.
Right, but you need to find out before you could configure your phone. You need to know, I'm sure you know this, you need to know what kind of server it's running and what the server addresses are. Because you can't. You have to configure the phone with that information. So I think your first job is to call IT at the company and say, what the hell server are we running?
Well, the problem with that is the fact that it's like I believe a lot of large companies that localized IT in the company isn't, I mean, I hate to say it, they're just not that bright.
Yeah, I understand.
And I understand. A lot of they don't really have the answer. Well, I use the, when you're typing in to go to the web outlook for the web, you type in HTTPS :// and then the server name. And so I actually use that server name, and it works perfectly on my phone, and I've set up several other phones the same way.
And you're using the Exchange profile on the iPhone, right? You're saying, I'm going to connect to an Exchange server. You're using Exchange almost certainly if you're using Outlook Webmail.
Well, but the thing is that now I can still set up mine and others that I've set up in the past on any other phone, and it seems to work just fine. But newer individuals that work here that I try to set theirs up for, it doesn't work.
Okay, so that's not the phone. That's a configuration that the IT department has to change. They're probably not allowing it. So what I think, I know you say your IT department's stupid, but I suspect that this is a configuration issue that your IT department has to solve. It's not something you can, you know, change a setting in the phone. They need to be permitted to do this. And it's a reasonable security procedure for a company to say, you can get your mail this way, but not this way. You can use Outlook Web Access, but if it's not Outlook Web Access, you're not allowed. You have to turn that. They have to turn that on, in other words. And that's, I suspect, why it's the newer users, not the older users. They probably changed policy. So I know you don't like the IT department, but frankly, you need their cooperation to get this thing done. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back to the phones we go. Denise in Valencia, California. Hi, Denise. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi. Welcome to the show, Denise. What can I do for you?
Hi, I have a iOS 4 phone, and I shot a 12-minute video of my cousins, and I'm wondering how I can compress it to send it to them over the browser email.
Yeah, the phone, you notice, will say, this is too long. Because they don't want you, I mean, 12 minutes, that's really long. They don't want you to waste all of your bandwidth, your phone bandwidth, sending these big videos. Not to mention the fact that it's probably going to fail. I mean, my experience with ginormous videos is you get 100 megabytes in and the thing just bleh. So really what they want you to do, what they expect you to do, is connect it to your computer, download it to your computer, and email it to them that way. You can't, you want to clip off bits of it? You want to edit it?
Well, I already got it out of my iOS phone, and it's on my hard drive.
Good,
and
great.
I did zip it, and it was originally 904 megabytes.
Yeah, it's a gigabyte. No wonder they won't let you send it. That's huge. That would use up, you know, a third of your allocation for the month. So here's what you need to do. Are you on Windows or Mac?
Mac.
Okay, so fire up iMovie.
Mm-hmm.
And you can use iMovie to edit it. And then you'll see there's a share menu on iMovie, and there's an email you could share via email. You can save it to QuickTime, and then it'll ask you how big you want it to make it. You can have QuickTime compress it. 12 minutes, a gigabyte's too big, obviously, but don't expect.
No, it's not gigabyte, it's megabyte.
Oh.
It's only 964 megabytes.
Yeah, that's almost a gigabyte.
Oh, it is. Yeah, that's right, 1,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's huge. That's huge. Zipping isn't good. So here's the problem with zipping it. Zipping works great on text, but it doesn't work so good on kind of random data like music, video, or programs. Oh. It only gives you a little bit of shrinking. Because zipping, the way zipping, it's a what we call lossless compression. And it works best on redundant information. So if there's a lot of... I'm not going to get too technical on why it works better, but it works better on text and things like that. Doesn't work so good on random looking data. That's what a video is. You need to use a video compression program, a lossy compression program, just as you would for music or pictures. to compress it. That's the only way you'll get decent compression. But iMovie will do that. iMovie, you could save it out at any size you want.
And what's the correct size to send it over, like, Hotmail or Gmail or Safari?
Well, you know, it's funny, in not so very distant past, 10 megabytes was all the email storage anybody got. That's changed quite a bit. I think here's what I would do, because you don't know. You're going to send it to a variety of people. Some of them may still have that 10 megabyte limit. I'm telling you, that 12-minute movie, you're not going to get it that small. You're going to get it to maybe 100 megabytes. So, I mean, if you really compress it, here's what I would do. I would take the movie as is. I would upload it to YouTube. You can do this so it's private, so that nobody can see it. Upload it to YouTube, and then email the link. That's a much more friendly way to do it, because then they have just a little tiny thing, and if they want to look at it, they click the link and they look at it on the web, and it doesn't fill up their mailbox. It saves internet bandwidth. It's just the best way to do it. So you don't have to use YouTube. There's lots of other places to share video. Vimeo, V-I-M-E-O, is good. But if you have a YouTube account already, you could do it on Flickr. There's lots of places you could share that video. Put it, in other words, put it on the web. Put it on Facebook. That's why a lot of people use Facebook. Put it on the web and then send people a link. Much nicer than sending out, you know, ginormous files to all your friends and family. You're on a Mac. Maybe you own, if you already have a MobileMe account, MobileMe would work. You just need to store it on the internet. Dropbox. That'd be a good place to put it. Get 2 gigs free. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, a good day to you. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy, and this is episode 783 in the continuing quest for technological perfection. 8888 Ask Leo, that's the number if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, if you want to talk high tech with me. Anything with a chip in it, that's the food for thought on this show. I'm here to help you. 8888 Ask Leo. Let's get back to the telephones. Kathy in Maryland. Hi, Kathy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, it's good to talk to you again.
Thanks.
And I'm calling... please, regarding my Wi-Fi 2200, I've had it for a week, and for the time being, I subscribed to just a 10-day plan because I wanted to see how it would go.
What a good idea. That's a great idea.
And primarily, I'm using it with the iPod Touch, or hoping to, for when it is that I'm not in range of the Wi-Fi. And the thing is, when I tried it with Safari for the first time yesterday, it put me onto a setup page, and I didn't think I had to do anything beyond doing the account, and which I already did using the USB connection on the computer.
Good. Oh, so you did do that. Yeah. So whose MiFi did you buy? Verizon? Virgin? Who?
Virgin Mobile.
Virgin Mobile. Okay. So what it is a credit card-sized device that connects to the 3G network. In Virgin Mobile's case, it connects to the Sprint 3G network. They also have 4G cards out now, but this one's a 3G card. And then is a Wi-Fi access spot. So when you first get it home, and I take it you did this, Kathy, you connect it via USB to your computer. You run some software. It actually is on the card, but you can also download it. And in the software, you enter in your details. You also choose, and I would recommend choosing a new password. It gives you a password that's based on the MAC address of the MiFi. That's not a very secure password. So choose a new password. I name mine after late rock stars. So I have a Hendrix and a Joplin and a Cobain. But you can name them after Greek gods, whatever you want. But I like to give it a name that doesn't make it obvious who owns this, where it's coming from. Don't use your address. Don't use your personal name. Just something that you can remember. And then, you set it up just as you would set up a Wi-Fi router. And then it should show up in your Wi-Fi access information. That name, once it's turned on, you can disconnect the USB now. And once it's turned on, should show up. I take it it's showing up properly. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And so when you select it and it gets on, it should do all of that. And it works fine on your iPod, huh?
Much. I mean, that's another thing. I could do a live stream from a place, okay, but like when I want to do Skype, it cuts out.
Well, that's merely that you just don't have enough, probably have enough bandwidth to do Skype. We use Skype on 3G, but exactly that. It cuts out, you know, it's okay for a while. It cuts out, it slows down, and it has problems. That's because 3G is inconsistent, frankly.
Okay.
So it's not ideal for streaming. It's not ideal for Skype. It's perfectly adequate for web surfing and email and that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, I'm waiting until I can get an iPhone 5, and then I'll be good.
Well, and the good news is the iPhone 5 will probably have some form of tethering, so you won't need the MiFi anymore. You can use it as a MiFi.
Yeah, that'll be great. I mean, I just got it because I was able to get it for one-third the price for when someone who was selling it.
Good. And Virgin Mobile doesn't charge a whole lot for bandwidth on that thing, so it's a good deal.
Yeah, and otherwise, like, a weird thing is going on in that it won't turn off when you have it plugged into the AC. I mean, I've tried different things, and it'll cut off briefly, and then it'll turn back on again.
Yeah,
I read in the
I've had that same problem with MiFis where they don't. It's hard to turn them off. You have to press and hold the button for a long time, and it probably does. It may be that the AC turns it back on. Because it's, you know, the AC plugs in through the USB port, and it may say, oh, you want to talk to me. But I'm a little puzzled by this welcome screen. You shouldn't be seeing that once you've configured it. So it might be something to take it back to the Virgin folks and say, hey, you bought it from another person, though, right? You didn't buy it from Virgin.
Yeah, and she's like across the country somewhere. So
yeah, she doesn't want to support you.
Email list.
Well, I go to the Virgin MiFi page. They have a big ask and answer section, really good, I think, ask and answer section, not in addition to their FAQs. And it might be that somewhere in here they have information that will help you with this. It should not put you on a landing page. It should just be Wi-Fi at this point.
Okay. And then, well, I had this other question about something else. My email account on Hotmail, it was blocked by Microsoft because of supposedly activity that shouldn't have been going on it. I mean, I only used it in order to keep my Windows Live Messenger thing going.
Probably what happened, Kathy, is that somebody guessed your password and accessed your account. And when they can do that, often what they do is use it to send spam. So that's what Microsoft is saying, is that it was probably because it was being used to send spam.
Yeah, well, they wanted you to have a code sent to your cell phone, and since I'm blind, I don't have that option. And like, I tried having it sent to my nephew so that he could tell me the code, and I tried several times, and I made sure I did the format right, and it didn't work. He never got a text message, and you know, I know he gets them all the time, and so I got disgusted because otherwise they wanted you to go through the resolution center that you had to do a different account for, and I just didn't feel up to it, so I closed the account. And so I'm wondering will they let me open up another one under a completely different ID, and will I be able to get my contacts back?
You won't be able to get your contacts back. Those contacts are now lost.
Right. Well, I mean, I can like put them in
get
the account.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, you can open as many Hotmail accounts as you want.
Okay.
Yeah, that's not a problem. Now, Terry H. in the chat room says it is in the manual. The Virgin MiFi does need web setup, so there might be one more additional step that is not involved with the USB connection. And then Kilroy says that the MiFi, older MiFis had that problem with USB waking them up, so you might want to look at getting a firmware update. So there may be an update you can get online for your MiFi card that'll fix that problem with not being able to turn it off. And if you're blind, you need to get your nephew or somebody to help you with the manual, because somewhere in the manual it says there is a need for web setup. If you're blind, that's a big problem, because you think you're online, and in fact, every time you open your browser, you get something that's not online. So that is a problem, but I think you could fix that. Now, Dan's saying if the MiFi is plugged into a wall, you can't power it off. The MiFi 2200 just is on. That's weird. That seems like a flaw. You can, of course, reset the whole thing and start over. Maybe that's the best idea. 8888 Ask Leo. Derek in Tennessee's next. Hi, Derek. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How Leo. How are you doing?
Fantastic. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. I had a comment and a question. The first comment was to the lady that called a little bit ago as far as people just sitting on their cell phones and not corresponding with other people around them.
Yeah.
I have a smartphone, and I love it because it's allowed me to stay in touch with people that I would not have been able to do without the smartphone, because it gives me so many different options as far as ways to communicate with people that might live 6-7 states away.
I'm with you
and
on
so
that.
I mean, think that it's actually an invaluable tool that allows people to interact that with people that they may not be able to otherwise.
Well, Facebook is the same thing for Facebook.
Exactly.
My daughter stays in touch with many of her friends, not via phone, not via text, not via email, but via Facebook. So, as is often
it's
the
nice
case
to
with
be able
technology,
to have that tool on your phone.
I agree. As with any technology, there's pros and cons. While I agree that I hate for us to get disconnected from one another, there are ways that it allows us to connect that we couldn't connect before. All right. But we didn't get to your question, Derek. So hang on the line. I got to take a break. We'll be right back after this and talk to you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I heard myself. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number if you've got a question. I'd love to talk to you. 888-827-5536. Did I lose the caller that I was talking to before I guess I did. How about Derek in Tennessee? Derek, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo.
Hey, Derek.
You weren't lucky enough to lose me. So I
oh, it was you. Oh, good. All right. I'm glad I didn't lose you. What could I do for you?
So my question is, I am a graduate student. I'm finishing up my master's degree. And I've been one of the lucky few people in the sciences that's been able to maintain funding to be able to move on to a PhD program.
Congratulations. That's great.
Thank you. It was a big surprise, and I was actually able to get something to be able to continue on. The issue I have, though, is that the funding that I have is limiting as far as what kind of research I can do, and I would like to look into the possibility of doing a small business startup and be able to do my own small business and research on the side that I can do from home, but I need to be able to find funding. And I know there's places like Kickstarter and stuff like that, but when I look into it, it seems to be mostly arts-related and not so much science-related. And I was wondering if you know of anything that might be more science-based that's similar to Kickstarter that would allow me to find a way to start funding, like, solo research in a small business startup.
That's very interesting. So it would be a business.
Well, it'd be, I'm looking at starting up a small business to protect any results that come out of my research, because if I do it on campus, then it automatically becomes school property, and they get patenting rights and all that kind of stuff. But if I'm doing it on my own,
very smart,
from them, I'd like to be able to protect anything that I get out of it.
Well, there are a number of routes to get money. I mean, if you think you've got something that really could be revolutionary, I'm sure you could find investors who would support you for a piece of the action. I mean, you'd have to convince them that it's got the potential to make a lot of money, but you don't have to convince them that you're going to be able to do it. Most venture capitalists and angel investors understand that most of their investments aren't going anywhere. They're looking for one hit in 10 or one hit in 20. That's a big enough hit that it could change, that makes up for all the others. So that's one way to do it. A little tricky, but you have to prepare a whole presentation and so forth. You're right. Kickstarter is a great idea, and I don't think you should reject Kickstarter out of hand. What they don't do, they don't like to fund businesses per se. They like to fund projects. So, it says artists, designers, filmmakers, musicians, journalists, but it also says inventors. So I think that's what you can focus on. Now, of course, the trick on Kickstarter is that in order to raise money on Kickstarter, you've got to get publicity. There are so many projects on here, most of whom nobody will ever see. You've got to do some marketing on your own to get people aware of Kickstarter so that they can donate to you.
Yeah, and a lot of people see the stuff that I work on and they hear insects and they start running for the hills because
you're the bug. We've talked to you before, the bug guy.
Yeah, we've talked a few times.
Yeah. So you want, what is the, I don't, without giving away the secret sauce, can you give me some, an outline, a sketch of what kinds of things you'd be raising money to do?
Yeah, what I'm looking at working on is there's a lot of recent research that's gone into trying to find ways to control insect-borne diseases, like diseases that are passed from, inadvertently passed from mosquitoes or other insects to humans. And I've, at least in my brain, in my own, you know, sense of thinking that I'm smart sometimes, came up with an idea that there might be a way of controlling disease transmission using proteins that are already produced by the insect. And if you're able to find a way to get an insect that produces that protein, then it might keep the disease from, or the pathogen from being able to reach a level that can be transmitted to people.
I presume that you've looked for the traditional source of funding for this kind of things, grants.
Yeah, and that's the problem is that right now, and it's a big problem with a lot of universities and anybody, is that the government, especially like the NSF, has cut their funding by an enormous amount. And so even if you have a really good idea, it's really hard to get any kind of funding at all from a traditional research grant scenario.
Yeah, it's an interesting challenge. I mean, that's normally how this kind of thing would happen. I do think that there are, if you look at Kickstarter's categories, there isn't anything that says kind of basic science research. So you couldn't pitch it that way. You'd have to pitch it as, you know, a new technology. They do have, you know, a technology category, but I think it's kind of, you know, almost all of these technologies are with an eye to making a product, and I don't see the product immediately anyway from what you'd be doing. It'd be
kind of the product ends up being a transgenic insect that ends up moving forward, but a lot of times they don't, you know, you can't even really consider that a product.
I mean,
you
can, it isn't. It's not productizable. I mean, look, in the down the road, I could see huge value and maybe even a number of products, but it's hard to pitch that on Kickstarter because people invest in Kickstarter because they're going to get a piece of whatever it is, not an investment piece, but they're going to actually get the object that you're going to create. If it's a movie, they're going to get a copy of the movie. If it's a play, they're going to get to see the play. If it's a wristwatch, they're going to get the wristwatch. So it's hard to say, well, you'll get a transgenic insect maybe down the road. I don't want that. So I don't think you're right. I don't think Kickstarter is the right place for you for this. You could apply. Kickstarter has to accept you, and they will tell you, that's not quite right. And I suspect that they would tell you that's not quite right. I don't know where you'd go. That's a really interesting. If grant money has dried up, that's a problem because fundamental scientific research, really fuels all of the innovation that comes out of this country in technology, in industry, in invention, in science, in medicine. We need to make those fundamental research steps before they can be productized. That's why the grant process exists. That's why NSF gives money to people for fundamental science research.
Yeah, and that's been the big problem. And I'm kind of, in a way, surprised that someone hasn't taken that idea and twisted it towards more of the science area, because I know that there's a lot of people, like as I talk to people, a lot of people that would like to be able to find a way to contribute, but there's no like official route for them to be able to do it.
You might have to go to somewhere like the Sloan Foundation. You might have to do some foundations, private foundations for this kind of thing. There might be some that specialize in transgenic bug mutations. I don't know. There's another site, GoFundMe.com, that is a little bit less specific about how you're raising money. There's much less of a tit for tat. You're not offering a product to somebody, just saying, please help me. You're putting out your hand. It's a way to automated way to put out your hand. GoFundMe.com. That might be a better way to. I mean, people ask for money for their honeymoon, or help with medical bills. So you could do that. But here's an opportunity for you, Derek, to really make a difference in the world. Maybe go out and find some venture capitalists or angel fund investors and that kind of people who are willing to invest in basic science with a hope for a long haul return. We need it. It's really important. I just saw that we spend more money air conditioning the troops in Afghanistan than we spend on NASA every year. We need that research. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Maureen is in Texas, our next caller. Hey, Maureen, Leo Laporte here. What can I do today for you? Or maybe let's put it another way. Hi, Maureen, this is Leo. What can I do today for you?
Martine.
Oh, it's Martine, not Maureen. See, if I said the name right, she'd know I'm talking to her. Hi, Martine, it's Leo. What can I do for you?
Hi, Leo.
Nice. I'm sorry. You're not Maureen. You're Martine.
Yes, I am. I'm from Austin.
I feel like such a fool. What can I do for you, Martine?
Well, I have this question regarding VPNs. I have a router, and it's here, 3700, and I have a Roku box, thanks to you, actually.
I love them, yeah.
Well, and I want to know if, let's say I need to move back to Argentina, and I would like to continue watching my movies in Netflix. So I was wondering, if I go down there, I cannot do that because I'm in a different IP zone. So I was thinking in connecting everything to a VPN. I know I can connect an iPad to a VPN and watch Netflix that way, but what happened with the router? Can I do that?
That's a great question. Yes, you can. So and I'm sure this is illegal, but I don't know. Right. So you should check with all the parties involved to make sure this is not illegal. But just so you understand the technology, because that's all I'm here for. I'm not your moral arbiter. I'm merely a technologist. So the key is not to look like you're coming from an IP address outside the U.S., an internet address outside the U.S. That's where a VPN or a proxy server helps, because you, instead of getting public on the internet in Argentina, you'd get public on the internet in the U.S. by routing your traffic through an Argentinian proxy server or a VPN to the U.S. and then emerging onto the public internet. It's as if you built a virtual tunnel from Buenos Aires to Dallas, and then you emerge in Dallas. The trick is, how do I tell my Roku box or my router, actually, how do I tell my router to go that way? Well, you can, because your router has in its settings a gateway address. So what you need to do is point that gateway address to a proxy server. I'm not sure. Some routers probably have. Let me ask the chat room this. I would imagine some routers have the ability to use a proxy, but I'm not sure. So it's a question of configuring in the router so that instead of going to your internet service provider, that now, by the way, when you do that, that means every bit of traffic that you send through that router is going to go through the overhead of a VPN or a proxy to get to the U.S. before you get out on the into the.
That's going to slow down the connect.
It always slows it down. In fact, it may slow it down too much to use the Roku.
Okay.
So, and Bill in Michigan says that consumer routers do not often have this. Higher end routers will, however, says Blue Matt.
Okay.
So you might need a fancier router to do this. You may. That's an interesting question.
There's like the mail server. You have the PPO.
PPPOE, right.
Yeah, something like that. There is like that you can connect. If you have your router and you have a broadband connection.
It's a really interesting question. Yeah, that's the other thing you could do is you could get an internet service provider in the States, and can you connect your router to them? I wonder. Using PPPOE, you might be able to.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be very interesting. I'm not sure. So here's a router company. Thanks to, again, our brilliant chat room, Jim Martinson or J.M. Martinson or J. Martinson in our chat room says a company named StrongVPN.com makes routers specifically for this. They're VPN routers.
Yeah.
And they're not hugely expensive. You get the router and their software. So that's pretty cool. So this might be a good solution for you. And then you could have your standard router connecting you to the internet. And then when you wanted to watch Netflix, you'd just connect your strong VPN to the outside world or something like that. That's a very interesting question. I'm not sure. I'm sure there's a million ways to do this because there's a million Argentinians who want to watch Netflix. Paul D in our chat room says VPN will be fast enough for this. That's true. Proxy servers tend to have more overhead than a VPN server would. So look for a VPN router. Jeff points me to a site, freevpn.tv, that is specifically designed to do this. Free VPN to watch US TV online. Netflix actually has an ad on this site. There is a Netflix ad on this site. That's odd. Does that mean Netflix tacitly endorses this? It might be, because they're still getting your money. The people who don't like this are the movie companies, the content companies, who don't want or have not licensed Netflix to offer that content outside the U.S. So Netflix may say, yeah, just between you and me, you can do this, because they're going to get your $8 a month or whatever. It's the content companies that say, can't do that. I'm always for the little guy. But do check the laws of the land and your terms of service with various companies. I'm sure Netflix in their terms of service says you cannot do this. I would be shocked if they didn't. It would be violating their terms of service. And I might also add, is it ethically wrong? Probably. Your ethics are your ethics, but and the law is one thing, ethics are another. Will you be able to sleep at night, Martine? Somehow I think he will have no trouble. Ryan in San Diego, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Ryan.
Hi, Leo. This is Ryan, and I'm using the long weekend to clean up and reconfigure my home office.
What a good idea.
I use primarily a corporate-issued laptop, and then I use a secondary monitor because I look at a lot of spreadsheets and I need to compare data. But when I reconfigure my office, I want to put a TV, a flat panel, on the wall so that I can watch CNBC and keep up with the markets during the day.
I have the exact same thing right here in front of me.
Ah, very nice.
It's hooked up to a Mac Mini. I am using a dedicated computer for that, and the Mac Mini has a box that connects to the cable, and that way I can watch the stock tickers, I could watch streaming video, and I have a window on there that I can make full screen that is television.
So that's exactly what I'm asking. I want to be able to, whenever I choose to, if I don't want to watch television, because I guess I can hook the TV directly up to the cable. I do have a cable outlet in the office.
Yeah.
But I want to be able to, if I want to put a spreadsheet on the TV or whatever it is, if I want to use it as a monitor instead of the monitor that's in front of me on the laptop.
Easiest way to do this would be to have a dedicated computer attached to that TV monitor. Have the TV monitor be the computer's display, and either have a wireless keyboard and mouse that lets you control that across the room. Because remember, you're not sitting in front of that monitor. I presume the monitor is a few feet away. So you have a wireless keyboard or mouse. Or in my case, I use remote access on my desktop. I open up remote access to that Mac Mini across the room, and I control it that way. It works quite well. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. There's a place called Kokomo. That's the Beach Boys. That's where you wanna go to get Leo Laporte, the tech guy, Independence Day weekend. I hope you're having a wonderful weekend, enjoying the beautiful weather, and I hope you're having beautiful weather. Every week at this time, we like to check in with our favorite gadget hound. He's called the Gizwiz, Dick D. Bartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer. He's joining us right now from his lair in Gizneyland. Hello, Dickie D.
Leo, how you doing, pal?
Very, very well. Very well. So we're
yes,
gonna,
I am
we're
at
gonna,
Gizneyland.
We're going to do our show in just a little bit. That's why Dick comes in here a little early, because every week we do a gadget podcast called the Weekly Daily Gizwiz. Don't ask. And you can listen in by subscribing on iTunes or whatever, and we cover a number of gadgets. But I like to get Dick on the radio show too, because people like gadgets everywhere. Everybody loves gadgets.
Absolutely. And this gadget is kind of fun. You know, you were talking earlier about people getting the iPad. And the only problem you may have with an iPad is memory. If you're going to a hotel and you want to bring 30 of your favorite movies, you'll use up all that memory on the iPad. So this is called the GoFlex Satellite Mobile Wireless Storage Device.
Holy moly!
They should have added Seagate in there, too. They could have made it even longer.
Oh, it's from Seagate.
It's from Seagate, yeah. So this is a 500 gigabyte hard drive with a built-in battery.
This is very intriguing.
Yeah, so you go to your computer, either Mac or PC, you download their software, transfer all your files, everything you want to this hard drive, and then anywhere you have a Wi-Fi signal, you can then stream the video or photos, even documents if you want, from this device to your iPad, actually any Bluetooth device, any Wi-Fi device, rather.
So just to make it clear, because I didn't understand this at first, if you are in your car, for instance, it won't work because you need to be on a Wi-Fi network.
Unless you have a very long cable from your
then it'll work.
Yeah, then it'll work fine.
Yeah, no problem. But at home, this would be great, or in a hotel, you might have Wi-Fi. Well, I don't know if it'll work in a hotel.
Well, you know, probably. You know, a lot of the hotels are getting better and better Wi-Fi because hotels now realize that business travelers want to really be wired when they get there.
Right.
And the neat thing about this, Leo, at the demo, the little mini CEA event they had, this little thing sitting in the middle of the table, there are two iPads and either an iPhone or an Android device and different movies on all three of them. And I was talking to Nathan, the PR person, and I said, what am I watching here? And he said, well, what you're watching is that little hard drive working wirelessly with Wi-Fi is showing those three different movies at the same time to these three different devices.
Now that's kind of cool.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So if you hate what your kids are going to watch, you can watch something different. It's USB 3, which is good. I mean, it's backward compatible, of course, to two. And it comes with a car charger, 12-volt charger, an AC charger, and it's under $200. And it's available now.
The Agent GoFlex ultra-portable drive.
Mobile. You found mobile.
Dick DiBartolo is online at gizwiz.biz. That's his website, gizwiz.biz. You could play his What the Heck Is It contest there.
The new one's up.
New one just started yesterday. It's a picture of something. You have to figure out what it is. Now, the truth is you don't have to figure out exactly what it is because there's only 12 autographed copies of Mad Magazine for the right answer. There are 24 autographed copies of Mad Magazine for the most creative answers. So
yes.
Better not to know what it is. You have a better chance of getting yourself a Mad Magazine. Gizwiz.biz. Dick, don't go anywhere. We're going to do the Daily Gizwiz. I'm sorry, the Weekly Daily Gizwiz in just a moment.
Yes, thank you. I am Velcroed to my chair.
That sounds painful.
Yeah, it is very painful.
And also embarrassing when you stand up.
I don't stand up.
There you go. Now, Joe's in Virginia, our next caller. Hi, Joe. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I really enjoy your show because you answer such a variety of questions, but you've probably never got a question like this one before.
Oh, good. I like it.
I'm a satellite radio subscriber. I used to have Sirius, and now I have XM. And I've noticed that the quality of the traffic and weather and the sports schedules sound metallic.
Yes.
And when I had Sirius, they used to sound have studio quality to them most of the
yeah.
time.
Yeah, so I can explain that. And it's due to a limited bandwidth, frankly. You're getting this from the satellite. And so, actually, Sirius and XM both do this. The quality of the audio you get varies depending on the content. Of course, they're going to give you the best quality for music. But when it comes to voice, and you may not have noticed it, but Sirius does this. In fact, in my opinion, Sirius does it more than XM does it. They will give you a lower quality. And it's exactly analogous to having a lower quality MP3. For voice, a 32 kilobit per second MP3 it's noticeably not as good as music, but it's fine for voice. You can hear the voice. It's not as bad as a telephone, but it's on that scale. It's a little bit metallic is a good word for it. It's a little bit artifacted because it's compressed more. But that's how they get so many channels on that single satellite collection.
Because I've noticed that XM has more channels than Sirius,
exactly,
actually, which is why I like it.
That's how they do it.
Event on the same channel, the live sporting event sounds fine, but when they go to a tape, it sounds a tape recorded thing, it sounds you lose quality on
that's
that.
That's because there's an engineer who's turning the knob down, saying, "Good, now let's use less bandwidth." So they can turn it up and down on each channel. And so every channel has its own amount of compression. And, of course, voice-only channels or channels where maybe they have fewer listeners, they can turn the compression up. And they do. And that's how they get more channels on there. It's, you know, if you think about it, satellite doesn't have kind of unlimited bandwidth. It has a certain amount of bandwidth. And to get more channels on the same amount of bandwidth, they have to compress some more.
Just like the TV you were talking about, well, they only have so much space, so they have to do something.
Yeah, people don't know this, but cable does this all the time. And different cable channels have different standards for how compressed they are. In fact, they even have different standards for what they consider HD. Some channels may send you, I don't think any channels do, but they could send you a 1080p signal. Most channels send you 720p. Some say 1080i. I mean, that's all kind of tunable. And it really does finally come down to how much bandwidth is available. So it's kind of the way it is with satellite radio, that in order to get more channels, some of those channels sound a little less well. Once you understand that, it's not something wrong with your radio. It's not something wrong with their source material. It's just that they figure traffic and weather. You're there not for the fine audio fidelity. You're there to find out what the weather's going to be and what the traffic's going to be. So they tune it down a little bit. In the same way, and we get used to it, in the same way that your voice doesn't sound as good on this phone call as mine does, because you're on the phone, and it's a much more bandwidth-constrained medium. I'm out of time, but I do hope you'll come back and we can all talk about all this stuff again. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great Independence Day.